Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 125 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland, coming to you live on this fine Sunday in mid-August, and joining me the first time in a little bit, Gaurav. What's up, man?
Not too much, man. How you doing?
I'm all right. The Braves won today in kind of bizarre fashion and sort of saved the week. It's kind of funny. I said this before on the podcast, but it's kind of funny how much Sunday results often seem to influence people's moods. I think probably the biggest audience of the week is always that Sunday afternoon game. Mm-hmm. And then this time especially, it went from a 3-4 week to a 4-3 week with a come-from-behind win. So, by the way, also, the game on Sunday today was pretty nuts. The Brewers had 19 hits and lost, which I think you were saying is a crazy stat. I'll let you deliver that. But, you know, the Braves trailed multiple times, only got 4 innings from Sean Newcomb in a game where he was not very good and still managed to win, and that's kind of always nice.
Yeah, I saw the stat by Bowman. He said that the Braves are now 3-59 when they've given up at least 19 hits dating back to 1966. And it was the first win since the since they beat the Padres in 2006. So it's been a while. It's a little history happened today.
Yeah, I mean, it's
not so great history for the Brewers, but pretty cool stuff for us.
It was a weird game. I mean, I watched it. I candidly was watching a lot of the PGA Championship as well.
Yeah, so same here.
I do have two TVs. I'm spoiled and have two TVs in my living room, so I was able to kind of watch both at the same time. But one of those things where, just a wild one, back and forth. Dansby had a home run, which we'll talk about later. He came back from the dead. Ozzie with a big home run, and sort of a fun game, even if it was kind of frustrating early on to come back and win that one was nice. After today, at least as of this moment, with the Nationals playing later today, the Braves are now slight NL East favorites, according to 538. Wow. And they, of course, are now tied in the standings again after this particular game because Philly lost on Sunday to San Diego. So it doesn't really matter. I don't want to do too much of that, but it does feel like it was a big weekend. And for the Braves to salvage this 4-3 stretch, considering it was a very difficult schedule, you know, in the Nats and the Brewers for seven games, come away with four wins there is pretty nice.
Oh, definitely. And I can make a little PGA Tour parallel with the Braves.
Do it.
With Tiger's resurgence happening at the same time as the Braves resurgence, right? A good Tiger apparently needs a good Braves team.
That's actually, I guess, kind of true. I mean, maybe I should have thought of that at some point in time, that the Braves just needed Tiger to be good again, and they would be good again. That's kind of funny, and although he didn't win, but it was always close and was entertaining. To be sure. I mean, we'll talk to a couple things that actually happened this week, but I think the biggest one for me was the Kevin Gausman start on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
8 innings, 1 run, 8 strikeouts. He definitely looked very good. He was just okay in his first start, but definitely looked like a sort of a different guy. And I guess he's not pitching exclusively out of the stretch, which is interesting to monitor. I'm not sure how much that matters big picture, at least right now, but he looked very, very good on Friday. And again, considering what they had to give up to get him being a pretty good would be a nice win.
Yeah, I read about his change to the stretch, and he said he was able to find some kind of like mechanical adjustments that or mechanical problems he had while working out of the windup. And I mean, if these are the results, then you have to keep doing it, right? And I'm really happy. This is what you saw was like I tweeted about this. It was probably the most dominating game I've seen out of a Braves pitcher, despite the fact that we've had a pair of almost no hitters this season. He essentially had everything working, and this is the reason why he was the number 4 draft pick. Like, that splitter was insane. That changeup had incredible horizontal movement. And his fastball, you know, he can pump it up to, like, pretty much 97 whenever he wants. This was better than I could have imagined, and it was actually really fun to watch him pitch.
Yeah, if they don't – I mean, obviously you can't expect to get that kind of guy, but because that player is in there, it kind of just reinforces how defensible and how positive that trade was, just because they didn't give up all that much. And he does have real upside. You know, even if he's just the guy he was in Baltimore, the deal is still fine. But if he taps into some of the upside that we saw on Friday, it gets into be like massive steal territory, and that's especially considering the rental, the non-rental status. Like, you know, having him under control for a couple more years is really nice. So we'll see how much that matters. I mean, it's one start, and again, he was just okay in the first start. But if that unlocks something, hold on to your hats because he could be very
good.
There's
also a few other things that I saw. On a Fangraphs chat last week, actually, about the Gossman, or not last week, but about the Gossman start. And they were saying there might be changes in his grip on his two seam fastball too. Just something to maybe like analyze, take a look and watch if you're able to take a look and see his like placement and see if that actually has happened. Cause if they have found something to make him a better pitcher and unlock that, you know, number four pick potential, that trade is a laughable trade.
Yeah, there's no question about that. It's like a situation where, again, the return was so low that anything that looks like the pitcher on Friday is a win, to be sure. One more thing before we get into some like, more big picture stuff is that Ronald Acuna continues to just kind of rake in the leadoff spot, now up to a 127 WRC plus for the season, which is very, very good. And he has about a 900 OPS, like in the 140 range WRC plus since he came back from the DL. It's like a 30-game sample. Obviously, it's a little bit, small sample size stuff when you're talking about him hitting leadoff, but he looks a lot like the guy that we thought he might be. And considering how young he is, you know, another big homer today, and he just looks fantastic. And like, I feel like he just may never leave that spot. It's kind of wild to think about, you know, every once in a while. I actually think we've probably not talked about Acuna enough recently, which is kind of bizarre to think about considering how much we talked about him in the offseason and in April. But this is a 20-year-old that's been like a well above average major league player this year in a pennant race, which is just kind of crazy just to say out loud.
I just took a look at his stats right beforehand, and he's up to now 1.5 OR, which would put him fifth, or FOR, which would put him fifth on the team.
That includes the injury too, which is crazy.
Yeah, he's played in 55% of the team's games, and he's now fifth in FOR. He just passed Ender today after his performance, his 339 WRC plus performance of today.
Whew. Yeah, home runs do that. But no, I mean, I do think I'm almost guilty. Like, we maybe not overhyped, but we definitely hyped him up preseason as you should have, because he was he's a number one overall prospect kind of guy. He's a monster. And then he kind of went away and he came back and he was pretty good. But I'm just sort of reminded of him looking at the numbers today during the game. I was like, man, I wonder what Acuna's been up to. I know he's been hot. I looked at the numbers. I was like, man, he's 20. Like, this is kind of absurd to be this good this early. And it's not that small of a sample anymore. I know it's 55 games or whatever it is, but it's not that small of a sample. Like, it's not like he came up in September and raked for a month. Like, we're talking about, you know, even with the injury, 3 months, 4 months of production. Like, this might just be the baseline and only with upward trajectory after that, which is a scary thought because he's already really good.
What's great is you're seeing the strikeouts come down too, and you're seeing the power hit. Like, I didn't expect, you know, what's his ISO now? A 242 ISO. Well, I guess I kind of did.
I mean, that's kind of reason. It feels reasonable.
Yeah,
honestly.
Yeah, which is nuts to say about someone that young and when someone with such an objectively long swing. But you're seeing the strikeouts go down a whole lot and normalizing into what we more expect. It's like the 20-25% range, which is okay for a guy with an ISO of 242. Like, you can't really nitpick too much. And his walks are going to go up. I assume he's going to be like a 8-10% type of walk guy. It's not there right now. He's under 7, but you're going to see those numbers go up. So it's going to have an even higher OBP, and you'll see his OPS go up even more. There's a lot to like about him.
Yeah, for sure. We can go down the rabbit hole there to be sure, but he's been very, very good. Okay, a couple of themes that I want to hit on the pod. One is not that positive, and that is the work of Kurt Suzuki. I feel like last week I was like right after the podcast, I kind of kicked myself because I was looking up some numbers and stumbled into the fact that he's just been kind of bad for a while now. And we got really excited about Suzuki early on, especially after last year when he was fantastic, almost a 3-1 player last year. And then he got off to another hot start this year. But recently he's been kind of bad since May 1st. He has a 237, 296, 366 slash line, which is bad even for a catcher. And they're still kind of doing this straight 50-50 split between Flowers and Suzuki. Flowers, by the way, sneakily is just absolutely mashing left-handed pitching all season long. Like, he's been I think as of before the game today, he had a 259 WRC plus this season against left-handed pitching.
Oh wow!
It's a pretty small sample. It's like 100 plate appearances because he was hurt and hasn't played that much. But he's just murdered lefties this season. It's pretty outrageous. So I guess my question, if there is one, is like, what is Kurt Suzuki? Which is tough to answer. And then B, is that enough of a sample to be like maybe trying to tinker more and maybe play Flowers a little bit more than Suzuki, or maybe try to have him face left-handed pitching? Because I've always kind of thought Flowers was the better player, even when Suzuki was kind of going crazy. It didn't feel extremely sustainable to me, but Flowers hasn't been like, you know, insanely good or anything. But I do think, like, all things equal, he's probably a little bit better and probably should be more of like a 60-40 split, which isn't that much different than where we are now. But right now they're kind of just alternating, and that doesn't seem necessarily like perfectly ideal to me.
Yeah, I think once you factor in, like, you can look at all the numbers, all the offensive numbers, like, available. But once you look at the framing stats as well, like, Flowers is significantly better. And so while Kurt is going on this, let's be real, this is kind of probably more about what we expected Kurt Suzuki to perform.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
like a 100 W, like a league average bat out of the catching position is a lot more what we expected. But with it, you kind of, for him to be such a poor framing catcher, you really need for him to exceed with the bat, and that's what he's not doing. And so I think there's just a lot more value playing Flowers, no matter, play Flowers more, no matter the offensive output that Flowers is going through right now.
And even then, like, you know, Flowers has been better with the bat all season long by the season long numbers, you know, 109 WRC plus for Flowers. Versus what 95 for Suzuki, which isn't like a huge gap for a catcher in a pretty small sample, but I do think it was nice for them to ride the Suzuki hot streak early on when he was kind of just mashing like he was last year. But you know, given his age, it was probably always going to slow down at some point, and we've kind of arrived there quietly. I didn't really notice it, frankly, until I was looking up the numbers earlier this week and was like, oh, maybe it actually just has been longer than I thought. He's been kind of bad for 3 months, and 3 months is a long time. So yeah, more Flowers for me. I'm not sure how much that's going to be. And, you know, it's the catcher spot. You're never going to just play the guy every day. Like, there's going to be some sort of split there. But I would be leaning a little bit further into the Flowers direction, if possible, just because that makes more sense. He's just a better player. It's just what it is.
I agree. And I'm looking at it right now. Tyler Flowers, this is a bad year for him, in all honesty. But he's 11th in runs against runs above average, which is like your, you know, a great defense. Well, it's really tough to quantify the catcher defensive
catcher
stats.
Is so hard, man.
But yeah, he's 11th in Major League Baseball, while Kurt Suzuki is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th worst at -10. So that's a very big difference in their defensive value. So right now, I would definitely actually play Flowers more.
Yeah, it's about that time. I don't want to pick on Suzuki because, again, as you mentioned, it's probably what we should have expected coming into the year, which is kind of what he is at this point. He's really a backup catcher, and that's fine. But Flowers is still pretty good, so use him more often. And I don't want to go down the lineup rabbit hole. There was one weird thing that I noted this week where in the Washington series, Adam Duvall played against a right-handed pitcher, and Ender played against a left-handed pitcher in the same series. And I wanted to claw my eyes out. I was like, wait, what are we doing right now? And I know some of that was days off or whatever, given the doubleheader, but they didn't need to do it the way they did it, and that made me crazy. So
didn't they both go like 0 for a combined?
Yes, they went
0
for 8, I believe, combined.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do too much of that, but I just felt like I had to say it out loud on the podcast. Like, that doesn't make sense. What are we doing here? Some of the lineup stuff was pretty bad early on. And then, you know, later in the week, they when they weren't giving guys days off, I should say, it was more settled to where we thought it was going to be for the duration now. So maybe it's just every time you tinker with lineup, Snicker reverts to his old self or something. but now that we got back to stabilization, maybe they'll be better off. But the schedule's not going to light up anytime soon. The schedule's kind of brutal. There's not a lot of off days. The Braves are still trailing everybody else in games played. So maybe he'll be trying to give more off days. I just think there's probably a better way to do that, and hopefully he sees that.
Yeah, I mean,
I
agree with you.
Well said. Okay. One more thing on the lineup before we get to some pitching stuff. Dansby, I mentioned earlier, hit a home run today on Sunday, which was nice because the Braves, A, needed it to win the game today. And also, he had been really bad for a while. He still has been really bad for a while. Since coming off the disabled list in mid-May, He entered today with a 59 WRC plus. He now has a 76 for the season, which is really bad. And before the home run today, he had a 450 OPS since the All-Star break. He's been really, really lost, really bad at the plate. Even the plate appearances today that weren't the home run looked really bad. I'm not sure there's even an action item, but I feel like we talk about him all the time. But like, how bad does it have to be before you might not play him all the time? Because there was a game or two the last couple of weeks where he sat, and people were like seemingly excited about that. It kind of comes down to where you feel about Dansby overall. And I haven't asked you specifically about Dansby in a while. So where are you kind of at with him, knowing that obviously his defense matters, but the bat might be just so bad that they can't play him?
Yeah, the 450 OPS, that's pretty much unplayable.
It's a pretty small sample, baseball. But yeah, it's not good.
That's not good at all. That's unplayable, in all honesty. As for big picture, you know, I still believe. I think as a whole, we need to, and as a whole, like Eric actually wrote a topic, a piece on him, I think last week, which was rather like controversial. But my main takeaway from that piece was I think we need to change our expectations of what we expect from Dansby. I think coming into his, like, as soon as we traded for him, you see the number one pick. You're like, oh, he's going to be, like, elite defensively, offensively. He's going to be a total package. I think this is more about, I don't want to write him off because he's still so young. But his career high was a 107 WRC right in 2016.
In a very small sample.
Yeah, that's not, you know, that's just slightly above league average. A 450 OPS, man, that's unplayable. You can't play. They'll have to figure something out. They're going to have to platoon him. That's not acceptable.
And they might do that. I do think that, you know, the talent level's there, but even I've been a defender of Dansby, but at the same time, if we see the kind of quality at bat, that's the thing. Like, it's not like the situation where he's just making good contact and being unlucky recently. It's really looked like noticeably bad. The contact's bad. Strikeouts are up. Like all that stuff that you don't want to see is kind of there. And I'm not a fan of panicking, but at the same time, you're in a pennant race and you do have other guys that can play there. I wish they had another option on the bench that was a little bit better, because right now, even if they move Camargo there, they don't really have a third baseman. So it isn't ideal. I wish they had another guy to play there. But there is a point of no return. I've defended his defense a lot, his speed, all that fun stuff. I think there's a level below league average as a hitter that he could still be a good solid player. But you know, if he's below that, it's kind of tough. So maybe the home run wakes him up today. He's still been good. Like, the numbers when he's been pitched inside are actually still very good. It's just everything else is bad, basically.
Yeah, if he's going to be league average with the bat, then that's a great...
Oh, that's a huge win.
That's a great shortstop.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, he's well below league average, and there's only so much, like... there's only so much you can help defensively, right? Like, to offset the contribution with offensively. I don't know. I feel like I'm going on. I'm trying to find reasons for us to play him, but as of right now, in a pennant race, if it was last year, I'd be like, you guys need to just shut up and let him play. You're competing for a possible division. Like, you need to play your best players. Dansby isn't your best player at short right now. And what you said was right. Like, I don't know exactly what you do. I don't think Camargo is, he can fill the gap at short, but then that opens up third, and then, you know, Culberson is okay at third, but he's not gonna light the world on fire.
That's my whole thing. If they had Mike Moustakas, if they had another guy on the bench that you trusted to hit, like, I know Culberson's been great, but I think you kind of need to leave him alone and have him be in that role that he's been good at, and that's kind of the role he should be in. If they had another guy, then maybe I would probably listen more to platoon stuff with Dansby, but I don't know, man. It's a tough spot. I do think they need to play him as much as they can, but as I've said, like, there is a point of no return. If he's going to be as bad as he's been the last couple of weeks, then that's beyond the point of no return. So hopefully the home run wakes him up here, but a lot of gnashing of teeth and things the last couple of weeks with people dancing. And I totally get it. He's been bad enough to where it's all kind of warranted, honestly. Mm-hmm. So there you go on that. Let's go to some pitching stuff. You're more of a prospect guy than I am, and I wanted to ask you about Colby Allard, because he's not looked great, I will say, at the big league level. What are your thoughts on him? Because a lot of people, you know, especially the last, I guess both appearances that he's made, but especially the start, people, a lot, there was a lot of stuff about him not being a major league pitcher, that kind of fun stuff. So he was bad in that game. There's no question about it. And, you know, two appearances so far, his ERA is north of 10. That's not good. But what do you think of him as a prospect and as a current asset? Because it's tough to talk about that unless you've seen him a lot. And I've seen him more than most, but I'm not a prospect guy, so you've seen him a lot more than I have.
Yeah, so the main issue is that we've seen so far in the big leagues for him is these control problems, you know, haven't existed for him. For him to thrive, he needs to almost have double plus command, because his fastball doesn't really, it's lost some speed already. It doesn't move as much as it, I don't even recall it moving it too much. His changeup has been almost non-existent in the majors as well, and then his curveball, you could just sit on it because it's fast. You can just watch it and just hit his fastball. As of right now, I do not believe, and I hate saying this so much, I do not believe he belongs in the majors. I think he needs to work on some kind of fourth pitch to help offset the loss of velocity on his fastball. He's still super young, so who knows? Like, he can show up next year with a little more umph in his fastball, but you know, the bad back, you know, well, I'm not gonna say it's bad back, he hasn't complained about it at all, but the history with the back injury is, you don't typically, you know, it's hard to rehab 100% from it, and maybe that's played into the into his fastball. But as of right now, yeah, he doesn't belong in the majors, and it really sucks to say that, because he's a great kid who's worked super hard to get to where he is. And he's had so many different like obstacles. I mean, the main thing is his height, right? Everyone talks about his height. Sure. He's not a big guy, and to be able to pitch, it takes a toll on the human body, because pitching makes no freaking sense. But as of right now, he needs to. I would say as of right now, he needs to work on either working on his changeup to make it a lot better, or he needs to add a fourth pitch, because I see a lot in him that I do in Lucas Sims, and we know what happened to Sims.
Yeah, I mean, I think people have forgotten that Aller did throw a lot harder than this. Like, there was a lot of people asking like why he was a first round pick when they were watching him.
And he was
like,
throwing 94.
Well, right, that was the thing. Like, if he was going to throw mid 90s, it made a lot more sense. The current version of him would not have been a first round pick. We kind of all know that. At the same time, I'm kind of with you based on what we saw and, you know, the peripheral stuff. I know he's been pretty good in the minors, but
so is Lucas Sims.
Right. Like, it's not a, yeah. He might just be at the moment. I know he's extremely young. So like any sweeping stuff on Allard is probably pretty silly.
Oh yeah.
But at the moment he looks like someone who shouldn't be in, especially like attending teams rotation. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what he looks like, but I want to at least ask you about him because it's tough. Like, you know, you want to see the young guys, and he's one of the young guys, especially when you have other guys that are not exactly exciting in the rotation, but he's worse than those guys at the moment. Mm-hmm. So let's transition here to a more fun topic of Tukey, because it's Tukey time. Monday afternoon, it looks like it's going to be Tukey's debut. They have not formally announced that, but everyone has said that's going to happen on Monday afternoon. So I know I'm excited about Tukey. I know you're excited about Tukey. He's been really good in the minors this year. So I'm just going to open the floor up to you to talk about Tukey, because I know you want to.
I'm just going to tell people to listen to my rant on him on the last time I was on your podcast. I'm so excited for him. If you get to know him like as a person, you get to and you talk to people around him, he has just like this glow about him. He's super hardworking. He puts in all the time and effort. Because he wants to succeed. To go along with that, his pure stuff is sensational. Like, he's got two different curveballs, one which is the absolute monster 12-6 that is scary to watch if you're a batter. He's got the he's got a new like slurvy type curveball, which I doubt he's gonna throw much tomorrow if he does make that debut. Fastball will sit 94 to 96, and if he wants, he can ring it up to like 98, 99. He did that a lot in the bullpen, like when he was in the Futures game or whenever they have him come out of the pen. And then his changeup has gone, like, it's what's ridiculous is his development. His changeup has gone to, you know, average, slightly below average, something that has projectability, but you weren't sure, to now this year, it's a plus pitch. He's got three plus pitches now. He's someone you want to cheer for. He's someone you want to get behind because just everything about him, his mental makeup, how hard he works, his dedication to the game, how much he respects the game as well. Like, I'm not a baseball fundamentalist or anything like that. I'm all about bat flips and all that kind of stuff. But just how much respect he has for his craft has made me respect him as a person, as a player. And I wish the best for him. I hope he's actually going to stay up here. I hope it's not a spot start. I don't think he needs to go back to Gwinnett. I think he's ready to take on the majors and be there for a very long time.
Yeah, I did think, you know, even a couple of weeks ago that it was more likely he would come up in the bullpen
for, mm-hmm.
this year mm-hmm. if he came up, and then sort of the seas parted, and here we are in August. I mean, I'm pretty surprised about that. Like, him getting a start in August is surprising, but I'm not upset by it at all. You know, I'm super high on him. I joked with Carlos Collazo on Twitter this week that we were talking about Tukey 2 years ago when we were doing this podcast at the very beginning as, like, our guy, and we still love him, and his upside is super high. I mean, there's no question about it. I think hopefully he'll look good on Monday, but if he doesn't look good, don't panic. Like, he's got, his stuff's going to be real. I'm not worried about any of that. You know, it's one start. He's 22 years old. It might not go super well. It's just one of those things that may not happen, but there's also a scenario where he looks great on Monday and people are already asking. In fact, we got multiple variations of the same question, and basically about if Tukey makes a good start on Monday and just looks like he's sort of major league ready, is there any chance that he just sticks around the rotation and they move like Tehran to the bullpen or do something like that? Do you see a scenario where that's the case?
No, I don't
either.
mainly because he's hitting his innings limit, but he's up near the top of what he's ever thrown before. And so throwing him in the heat of a pennant race when he's pitched more than he ever has, it doesn't make sense.
Especially
I can't see him.
I do think they might want to have him as like a potential X factor in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So
just
maybe
like,
that might be more valuable, honestly.
I could totally see him making like a Josh Hader type, you know, role this year where you can have an absolutely electric arm come in, and the Braves have a lot, they're starting to come, like, really come. You like, you got Minter showing up now. He's becoming who you expect him to become. This would be a really live arm that you can bring out in a pennant race and just whip through 99 miles an hour, that devastating curveball, that chip plus changeup, and just rip through a lineup, the heart of a lineup. Like, that's what you could possibly have from him. And that's what I actually expect the Braves to do. I don't think he's going to stay in rotation simply because of the innings limit.
Yeah, that's something I probably should have even brought up myself, but that's a good point about Tukey. Real quick before I move off of him, that's from the rotation. You know, most of those Tukey questions were as a result of Tehran looking like not looking great. Obviously, the three guys, you know, Newcomb, Foltynewicz, and Gausman are going to be in the rotation. That leaves two spots. If I were to ask you who you are most comfortable with right now, and by the way, the playoff rotation will probably be four guys, not five. That's just kind of how that works. So who would your fourth guy be right now?
I literally cannot believe I'm about to say it, but I'd actually probably go Anibal Sanchez.
I knew you were going
to
say that. And
I can't believe I'm saying that.
I think I probably agree with you. Julio just, man, he looks bad, honestly. Even when he, like, you look up and he's allowed one run over four innings, and it's just like, man, how did we get here? He looks terrible.
Hate saying that because he's been one of my favorite players since like back when he was a prospect. But right now, I just don't trust him in a must-win game.
By the way, he's 27.
Yeah, that's nuts, man.
It feels like he's done. It feels like he's 35 and he's done. And he's
25. It's nuts.
I mentioned this last week on the show, I think, with Eric, but his walk rate right now is 4.48 mm-hmm. per nine. He just cannot do that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no sign of it stopping either. Like, he, you know, all these, it's leadoff walks. It's everything you'd ever want to not see from someone who doesn't have elite stuff right now. He's doing all of it. So mm-hmm. Hopefully he snaps out of it, but I'm with you. I might be Anibal. I do think there is a spot if something gets weird. Like, I don't know. The innings limit thing scares me off, but, you know, let's just say the Braves are not set up particularly well for a series in which they have to use four pitchers because they really only have three that you trust.
Yeah.
Anibal has been the best of the other guys this year, but the clock is ticking there, I think. I have some skepticism about his overall landscape and his use there, but we'll see. I always had to ask you about that. One guy that kind of made his debut this week out of the bullpen is Chad Sobotka. He looked really good. People got really excited. There's all these arms that are like, you know, shuttling up and down right now. You know, Wes Parsons, all these guys. Anybody that sticks out to you as like someone you would trust in a serious bullpen spot right now? I know Sobotka looked good, But
no, yeah, actually, honestly, I would definitely trust Sobotka. Yeah, you know, he's got the main thing is with him has always been his secondary pitches. Like he's got the frame. He's what, like 6'7", 220. He's like imposing dude on the mound. His fastball has got good movement on it. Hits up to 99 miles an hour. And now the main issue he had has always been his slider. And apparently now his slider is flashing, not flashing, but is apparently average now. So between a really good sinking fastball and then a slider, you actually have a pretty winning combo for a successful major league career. And I think he will probably stay around. I think Parsons as well. He's perfect in the long relief role. He also has good downward movement on his fastball. He gets a lot of ground balls. I saw Adam McCreary make it up there.
Yeah, he got there.
Honestly, I don't see it with him. He struggles way too much with his command of pretty much all of his pitches. The projectability is there. You see him on the mound. It's exactly what you want a pitcher to look like, right? But he's almost too big. He's almost too lanky where his mechanics become very difficult to repeat themselves. And that's where his command issues arise. I don't think he's ready, but of those three, Sobotka is probably your best bet to stay in the bullpen for the rest of the year. Also, that it's very important for him to make that because if he's not on the major league roster, that 2014 draft is
ugly,
pretty bad.
It's not great. I'm glad you said that. But yeah, I mean, he looked good. I will candidly say I'm not super duper familiar other than the numbers, but he does look like someone you would want to have in a bullpen for a playoff race. I will say there was a report that everyone kind of laughed at and made fun of about Sam Freeman nearing a return this week. Man, I can't imagine what the reaction will be if they actually bring Sam Freeman back and he's in the bullpen. It's not going to go well.
I would take Sobotka over him right now.
Yeah, let's just leave that there. I almost made a comment. I held off, and we'll move on. Couple more things before I let you go. We got a lot of questions this week about Nick Markakis and a contract extension, or how what he'll be making beginning next year, and if the Braves want to offer him a deal. I do think at this point in time, he's been so good, the Braves are going to offer him a contract.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what that contract offer is going to be, but just for clarity's sake, he has a 139 WRC plus. It is August 12th. That is absolutely preposterous.
Wow.
But he's been ridiculous, man. There's no way around it. My favorite, I will say before I ask you, my favorite scenario, I think, at this point is the qualifying offer from Markakis. Mm-hmm. He might take it. He might not. But I would now offer that, which is, man, I can't believe I'm saying that out loud. last year it was $17.4 million. 1 year contract. You know, best case scenario, he signs it and... Well, you have a one year deal on a guy who's a little bit older than you want a guy to be in that spot, or he signs a big deal elsewhere and you get compensation. So that's probably what I would do.
It's nuts. I would 100% offer your qualifying offer to Nick Markakis. He absolutely deserves it. Like, he's been sensational. His walk rate's almost higher than his strikeout rate.
It's
his line drive rate.
There is no question. And people, I think, get this twisted, especially with me. There is no question that if he is this guy from this year, he's worth more than a qualifying offer.
Yeah.
The question is whether he can do this again. I will always err on the side of no when you have a lengthy track record from 5 years before this of him being basically a league average hitter for five full seasons, maybe six full seasons before this. But if he's suddenly the guy that he was, this year is basically the same exact season that he had in 2008. When he was a 6-win player and had a 138 WRC plus. Right now, his WRC plus this season in 2018 at the age of 34, almost 35, is his career high.
I'm going to supplement that with another stat. His hard hit percentage from this year is the highest of his career at 41.1%.
I mean, and listen, I will be the first to say that there is some indication this is real. I mean, how real it is the question. But you mentioned the walk rate versus strikeout rate. That's like a basically elite level. His mm-hmm. BABIP is higher than it's been, but it's because he's hitting the ball harder. I don't think it's safe to assume he's going to repeat this level. But if I'm much more open to thinking he could be a slightly above average hitter or better than that next year than I would have been before, obviously, because he's not shown this level.
And if you're not going to get, if you're not going to go out and try and sign a guy like Harper,
well, that's
I'm
the thing.
Trying to
it's
think.
Basically, and for me, here's what I would say about that. And that's a common retort when you're talking about Markakis is like, well, if they want to go get Harper or somebody else like that on that elite level, you can't bring back Markakis. And I'm like, yes, you can. All you have to do at that point, you're trading into Enciarte. It's not.
You're not
like prohibited from signing Markakis, especially to a short term deal. I would not give Markakis years. That would be what I would not do. And that's I'm sure I'll be accused of being a hater now. But the guy's going to be 35 in November. I'm not going to give him a multi-year big money deal. That's not something I'm going to do. If he wants to, I'd rather give Markakis 1 year and $25 million than I would give him multiple years. That's where with where the Braves are, that makes more sense. But it shouldn't affect your pursuit of Bryce Harper or anybody else, because if you really want to get Bryce Harper and you can get Bryce Harper. You sign
him
if you
want.
Yeah, you make room, and if you have to trade Ender Inciarte, that's fine because you have Ronald Acuña who can play center field. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like it provides you having Acuña really gives you a lot of options because we all know he can play center field, and that's usually like the big question mark when you're talking about guys who have a lot of bat talent in the outfield. Is like, well, who's gonna play center field? Well, Ronald Acuña. Yeah, I don't think that it's super likely that they go out and sign a big ticket guy and sign Markakis, but they absolutely could do that if they wanted to.
I want to find out who like beat their Zips projection by the most, because coming into the season, coming into the season, his Zip projection was 0.6 WAR.
What was Matt Kemp?
That's a great question.
One that's up there. I would think like Max Muncy. There's a few guys that have been like in that same realm. Matt Kemp's cooled off, by the way. So
Matt Kemp was projected 0.3. He's got 1.1 FWAR. Markakis is at 3.4. I think of those, he's probably the highest. I didn't look at Max Muncy, but it's remarkable.
The point
Steamer 0.4. They expected him to have the 106 WRC plus 0.4 WAR. And he's like, he's beaten up by so much. It's crazy. I can't believe we're having this conversation. But yes,
outrageous.
I would give Nick Markakis a qualifying offer.
Yeah, I would too. And I wouldn't even. I mean,
great. That's not even a hard decision.
No, it's not. I was about to say that. I don't think there's any way that he wouldn't be worth that. There's some risk there. Obviously, if he goes back to what he was last year, you don't want to be paying him that. But at the same time, a one-year deal has a lot less risk because even if he was the same guy I was last year, he's not just killing you. Like he's a one or one and a half win player. That's not what you want on a playoff team, but that's not going to murder you either. That's why I would give him money over years. I would not be giving him years, but yeah, the whole thing that we're having this conversation is pretty insane given where we were a year ago or less than a year ago. And yeah, he's earned it. I mean, there's no question about it. He's been tremendous. And that's my answer. I mean, it's not, people always ask, like, what I would offer. I'm like, man, a lot of money for 1 year is fine. If you could give him more than 1 year, you got to have some outs, I would say, at his age.
Yeah, I agree.
But maybe somebody comes over the top. I mean, the situation is, like, if someone just believes this is him, they might pay 3 years in big money, and I wouldn't match it, but I wouldn't necessarily blame a team for doing it. Like if they see that this is real in their whatever, you know, advanced scouting or tools that they have, and they think this is just now what he is, then sure. I mean, believe it.
I mean, you look at the advanced stats, the fly ball percentage
is really
up,
good.
The line drives are up, the ground balls are down. Like
this is
not exactly what you want.
Yeah, this is not. That's the first thing I want to say. And people, I think I've gotten it twisted, is that I'm not saying this is a fluke. All the numbers tell you that it's not a fluke.
Mm-hmm.
My contention is you couldn't have possibly seen this coming because there was no indication that it was coming before the season. That's kind of my thing. It's like that doesn't mean it's a fluke. There have been changes and all the numbers make sense, but you can look at 5-6 years of sample before that with no indication this was coming. That's my thing.
Yeah. I totally agree.
So there you go with that. I mean, he's been awesome, and I look forward to having this conversation again, especially if he's still this good through August, September, and hopefully in the playoffs. Yeah, I mean, the only way the Braves are going to get out of this with a cheaper option is if he slows down. I think they prefer that he just stays hot. So there you go. I guess one more thing I have to ask you. We got a bunch of questions. It's actually funny. I put out the mailbag call this week, and like half the questions were about Tukey, and the other half were about Ryan Flaherty. So let's just use this one. It comes from someone named AA on Twitter. It's not Alex Anthopoulos. I promise you, it's not him. He says Flaherty's clearly been bad. So what should the Braves do with that roster spot? So before we get into the roster spot thing, I want you to answer that question. Flaherty has 3 hits in 3 months. He has a 6.3 WRC plus for the season. He's very, very bad at most things. But he remains on the roster. Some of that can be attributed to not wanting to rock the boat. Looking the way that they, this is all sort of hindsight 2020, but they kept him over Jose Bautista, who's been very good in New York. There are other options out there that would have been a lot better. I can't frankly believe Ryan Flaherty is still on the roster in August. But it is now a good question, because we are in August and they still have him on the roster. There isn't an obvious move. Like if they were to just DFA him and send him away, there isn't like this obvious call-up guy that I see. The guys that I would want to call up are pretty much outfielders. I guess maybe Ruiz is like an option. I don't know. There really isn't that obvious option. So what would you do with that? Like, would you just hold on to Flaherty? I would not do that. But what if you say you're going to send him away? Who do you want to replace him?
Yeah, I think the main thing that he's got working for him is his defensive versatility, right?
He doesn't play defense, though. That's the thing.
He's able to play like multiple positions at like a average level, but he never plays. Even do that because it's not worth playing him. It's not worth starting him.
Well, and
yeah, it makes no sense. If I had to choose like one person,
Michael Reed.
Yeah, Michael Reed makes some sense.
My thing is that you have Camargo. That's my whole thing. You have Camargo and Culberson, who could both play all over the place.
Yeah, I get it. Like, there is no simple fit though. That's the main
there
issue.
Isn't.
Is
that's my one
who
minor
do you bring up?
My one minor defense, and I stress minor. I'm not defending this, but the only way I can think of that it makes any sense to keep him is that there isn't another option in their mind. I would just go with an outfielder that's a bat, because honestly, all Ryan Flaherty has been for months is a pinch hitter and a bad one. Because he doesn't play. You have Camargo. I mean, it'd be different if they didn't have Camargo and Culberson, who are very similar in terms of their positional versatility. But you have to have an injury or two to ever have Flaherty play the field. Like, I just don't get it.
I think Michael Reed, Dustin Peterson, he's starting to come around a little bit, although the power is not there at all.
I would still do that before. I mean,
Rio Ruiz makes a little sense. He's had a pretty solid year. I've been very vocal about him.
At least with Rio, you know he'll hit righties as a pitcher.
Yeah, he absolutely won't hit lefties.
But neither
much
will
at
Flaherty.
All, unfortunately. Yeah, that's a good point.
So just like make Rio. I mean, it's kind of it is funny to talk about it, because I wouldn't normally be this dismissive, but because he has been so bad, it's easy to do that and to like give me Michael Reed as a pure pinch hitter. Give me Rio as a straight platoon pinch hitter. Like there are other options who would bring more value. And I do understand like the theoretical idea of Ryan Flaherty as someone who plays multiple spots.
But you're right.
But you don't need that player right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of funny and also kind of serious in some ways, like the comfort level with Markakis. They are brothers-in-law, however you say that. maybe that matters. There's been some like not so joking references to that about how Markakis's production could be semi-tied to
Flaherty.
I don't believe
he's got
that,
a 24 WRC plus against left-handers.
He's terrible. I mean, there's no question.
68 against Ray. He doesn't belong on a major league roster.
I feel really bad because, like, by all accounts, he's a really good guy and really.
Yeah,
him.
Yeah.
But he's even. It's not just a small sample size. Like, he's been a bad hitter his entire career. Like, I'm looking at the numbers right now for Ryan Flaherty's entire. And it's not like this is some like prospect young guy who doesn't have. He's never had a chance to play. He's 32 years old. His career WRC plus entering today was 72. He has a career slash line in almost 1,500 play appearances of 217, 287, 350. Like, that's not a major leaguer unless you're like prime Ozzie Smith defensively, and he's not. So,
oh man, his highest season F4 was in 2013 when he hit 224, 293, 390.
Well, I mean, yeah, last time he had more than okay, so 2015, 72 WRC plus, 2016, 64, 2017, 51, this year, 65 with the Braves. He's been a sub replacement level player for Atlanta this year in almost 200 plate appearances. I don't know.
You can't.
What else to tell you?
They need to find something in like the August waiver. He can't be on a postseason.
I was going to leave this alone, but we got so many questions about it that I felt like I had to talk about it again. Because I do kind of feel bad, but it's just
I don't want to rail on the guy.
No,
because you are right.
Fault.
From all accounts, he's a great person, right, but like he's not playable in a postseason game. Like
I just think, and I hope that you know, it's just maybe they're just. Again, kind of writing it out because they don't have another option, and maybe later on they'll make a move if they have to. Maybe they hope he just comes alive, but he just doesn't play either. Like, even it's very clear that they're treating him as the 25th man,
mm-hmm.
which is okay because he should be treated like that. If he's on the roster, he's the worst player on the roster. But, you know, unless you're going to basically, like, today he hit in the fourth inning. Like, he pitched in the fourth inning today. Like, it's either that or he pitched it to like this in like the 13th because they need somebody and they're out of players. Like, it's bad. Anyway, so the short answer is they're not an easy option. I think you and I agree that we'd both rather have Michael Reed or Rio or somebody like that. We'll see what they do. And I do think that somewhere in the majors, there's probably a guy they could get off waivers in a very minor trade that would be an upgrade as well. Like, it doesn't have to only be, like, until the waiver deadline passes, it doesn't have to be purely internal. Like, maybe they can get somebody that's on somebody's bench that also isn't very good, but is also better than Ryan Flaherty, if that makes sense. Like, it doesn't have to be that. There should be a guy somewhere they can get. You know what I mean?
If you can get a 25th roster slot
just
type of person
hitter.
That is actually worth a roster spot, then
just find a yeah. platoon pinch hitter that can't defend. Even if it's a first base only guy.
Yeah, that's fine. You're 100% right. I didn't even think about
pinch
that.
Hitter.
Like, he doesn't play defense at all. There's
yeah,
no reason
I mean,
for him to play defense.
Because at the moment, you have a good pinch hitter against lefties in Duvall if he's not starting. But that's really it. Like, you don't really have – I mean, I get Culberson's been great again. Culberson's been fantastic. So he's obviously, you know, one of your best bench players this season. But you don't have this, like, arsenal of pinch hitters.
Mm-hmm.
It's your backup catcher. It's Charlie Culberson, and it's Adam Duvall against lefties, and that's kind of it. So you need that guy.
Yeah.
Especially in the National League playoffs when he's going to be a factor at some point.
Like, yeah.
But and for all the crap we've just given Ryan Flaherty, if you get to the playoffs, he's going to actually play a role because everyone on your roster plays a role in the playoffs.
And he pretty much cannot be allowed to do that.
Agreed. Wholeheartedly on that. All right, we probably railed on too far on a lot of different things, but do we miss anything that you want to talk about? Because I definitely want to give you the floor. I should have had you on before this, so my apologies. But please
no,
feel free
man.
To fire anything else that you want, because there's a lot going on, even though I feel like I'm trying to save some stuff too, but it's a situation where I feel like we could do two-hour podcasts every week, and I'm just trying to avoid that, honestly.
Well, I know you bring me on sometimes to talk about minor league baseball, so I'll probably talk like it's a small little thing.
Yeah, fire on some prospects.
I know last time I was on here, I talked about Touki Toussaint a whole lot, and I think the next person in line who I expect to have that kind of ascension and someone that you guys need to pay attention to would be Ian Anderson, who was recently promoted to Double A. Of the pitchers that are within the system, I would say Soroka's probably the top, mainly because not only the stuff, but he also has like the mental aspect of it is pretty much unparalleled from you don't see it in a minor league baseball player. But Ian, he's got it, dude. He's definitely, I love his arsenal. He's throwing them all for strikes, his fastball, curveball, changeup. He's throwing them all for strikes. His control's improved significantly. He essentially forced a promotion because people like weren't hitting him. He had a sub 200 batting average against, his Ks were up near like 12. And then his walks were at one point, I remember him being sub 3. He's it. I have him actually above Kyle Wright in my rankings, my personal rankings, because that's how much I like him.
That's
and I think
a strong
that's,
endorsement.
Yeah, I know. And it might not make sense. Kyle Wright's the big, you know, they're both big bonus babies. For lack of a better term, they're not babies, but you know what I'm trying to say. But he's got it. I think he's someone you need to watch next year. I think he's going to stay in Mississippi for most of it, but he's going to force a promotion up to Gwinnett. And you might see him as soon as, you know, 2020, which is something crazy to think about. A young kid out of New York. Ian Anderson. Keep an eye on him.
There it is. I mean, I think people know who he is, but I do think he kind of gets lost in the shuffle sometimes. So mm-hmm. it's worth highlighting every once in a while.
I know an even better one, actually. I don't know how to even think about this.
Let's do it.
Everyone was talking about the Gausman trade and losing someone like John Carlos Encarnacion. It was someone that we raved about over on the minor leagues, the minor league portion of Talking Chop. But be happy to know, I think there is someone actually better on this team, and it's the 20th round pick, CJ Alexander. I watched a lot of him after we picked him because I was unfamiliar. I talked to Matt Powers, who was also with Talking Chop, and he in our little group chat, he's like, I don't understand how this guy was drafted in the 20th round. And he's like, there's no way he's going to sign. He's way better than this. And so after Matt says that, Matt knows he has he pre-ranked the top 300 high school players coming into this draft, the top 300. Like, this is the guy who knows his stuff. So after he did that, I looked at him and I don't get it. He's got legitimate 70 power. And can play a premium defense. Like, he can play a really solid defensive third base. He'll hit for a high average. He's got a good walk rate. He'll strike out probably in the same level as Acuña, but this is some guy. I'm not going to put his tools up there with Acuña, but he's someone you need to keep an eye on next year. If you go ahead and take a look at his stats right now, I think on the season, he's probably close to a 1-point-something OPS on the season. And we expected him to struggle because he went from a small community college and then he's facing, you know, call it like younger talent, but the more polished college players are up in Danville. And he smoked them. He smoked them so much that he actually worked his way up to Rome, which is not something you see too often in the Braves organization. So if you need hope, if you feel bad about the Gausman trade, know that I personally believe CJ Alexander is actually better than Jean Carlos.
There you go. I like the takes. You know me, I will defer to you and you and Eric and Matt on this kind of stuff and Garrett and everybody else, but I believe you. So there you go.
I don't know how he's not top 30. We all had him top 30 in our rankings, mid-season rankings, and he's didn't chop the, I think MLB Pipeline had like 5 relievers in the top 30, which was a little weird to me.
That is kind of weird, just from a thematic standpoint, but. Anyway, all right, man. Well, that's a good way to end it, I think. I really appreciate it. Please tell people where they can find you on the Twitter machine and everywhere else, because you are a very intriguing follow that I enjoy.
Oh, I appreciate that. My personal Twitter account is at GVDAC. I only write for Talking Chop, so you can just check out my minor league pieces right there. I have a piece coming out on Tuesday, original content, so it should be fun.
Original content is the
original
key.
Content.
We love original content. I wrote a little bit about the playoff race this week and, you know, projection systems and all that fun stuff. I seem to be the guy who's drawn that assignment and I enjoy it.
So
what a baller thing
to be able to talk about right now.
It's a lot of fun.
I can't believe it.
Every few days for like 3 months, I've been tweeting out like 5 projection systems and their percentages, and everyone hates Fangraphs now because of Fangraphs has been last every time, and I always like, why does Fangraphs hate the Braves? I'm like, because they started the season hating the Braves and they haven't built it in yet. So it's kind of funny to see that people sort of always overreact, and some of it's become funny now, but I guess, as I mentioned before, you know 538 now has the Braves as the Annalise favorite as of this moment. At least it's by like 2 percentage points, but it's happening. It's a lot of fun to be tracking this stuff into August, that's for sure.
And for all of you listening tomorrow, happy Tukey Day.
Yeah, happy Tukey Day. Hopefully that goes well. I will be at work and probably won't be able to watch a lot of that.
Yeah,
so I have the DVR fired up to go back and watch Tukey's performance. So hopefully if he's bad, I probably won't watch it. But if he's good, I will go back and enjoy it when I get home from work. So that's just kind of
if he does struggle, just remember, just take a look at the pure stuff he's got and understand why there's so much hype around him. Like,
yeah, the hype is there for a reason.
It's deserved.
Yes,
deserved.
It's all the same. Well, it's the same word. It's just pronounced differently. All right, man. Well, thank you as always. We'll have to do it again sometime.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
As for everybody else, please subscribe to the podcast. Leave us 5-star feedback if you like the show. Also, of course, every single show is on TalkingChop.com with a listening guide. Check that out as well. We'll be back again next week, so stay tuned for that.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.